Good evening. Can you all hear me? Okay. Good evening. Nice to see you all. We're in Genesis chapter a little bit in 37, and then we'll be in chapter 39. Go to the last verse of chapter 37. The very last verse. Chapter 37, verse 36. Let me read this. Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. And then let's go to skip chapter 38 and go to 39:1. And it says, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Now you can see the last verse of chapter 37 and the first verse of chapter 39. Just continue a story. Chapter 38 is parenthetic. It is something that is said at that place. So we leave Joseph in difficulties in his land and with his family. And we know the story pretty well in this chapter. The brothers, according to 37:14, and the brothers said to him, shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and his words. The words were the fact that he had, they thought he tattled on them when Jacob sent him to find the four sons, two from one maid servant and two from another, from Rachel's and Leah's. And he went back and he told the father. The father, I think Jacob, had some problem with what the guys were doing, because as I said a week ago, it wouldn't seem right to send Joseph out with these four brothers of these two maids, who probably not only hated the brothers of Leah, but also, of course, hated Joseph. And Joseph had told the father what was going on, and they didn't particularly like it. And then he shared a dream. Now, these dreams are interesting because little would he know. He's a 17-year-old boy, and he's sharing dreams, and he's telling them some things, and he doesn't quite understand. But I suppose there's a bit of pride there. You know, sometimes when we say things to people, we just don't say it right, and it doesn't come across correct. Nevertheless, these brothers didn't like what he said about the dream and reign over him. And he would learn later on, as time went on, what God meant. But at this time, it was pretty hard for him to grasp. But he's a 17-year-old kid, and he needs some time to understand. But nevertheless, he has this. And so the brothers are angry at him. And it says in even in verse 10 of chapter 37, he said, so he told them to his father and his brother, this is his dream. And the father rebuked him, for he said, what is this dream you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? So Jacob took it kind of like the kid doesn't know what he's talking about. He certainly sounds proud. But listen, verse 11. And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. It kind of reminds me of Mary, doesn't it? She kept these things in her heart and pondered them. So at this time, Jacob is seeing perhaps something special in his son. He certainly is making him the heir, but something special in him. And so it says that the brothers hated him more. And but Jacob kept in his heart. And so we know what happened next. He is sold by his brothers and to Midianites. If you look at a map, you'll find that Dothan is north, farther north of Bethel and Shechem and Dothan. Now, when Jacob came back in the land, he stopped at Shechem, and then he stopped at Bethel, and then he went down to Hebron. And Dothan is a major trade route from the northeast and a trade route down to Egypt. And this is a major route where goods and slaves are bought and sold. So the brothers are supposed to be at Shechem, and Jacob wants to know where they are. Maybe he suspects something is wrong. Maybe they got hurt, or maybe they're wasting time. And so Joseph is sent, and he's told to go find his brothers. And you know what happened. He's looking for his brothers. And when he gets there, he can't find them. He gets to the Valley of Shechem, and they're not there. And some stranger says, can I help you? What are you looking for? Which is of God to help us along the way, thing like that. And Joseph tells him what he's looking for, and he says, oh, they've gone up to Dothan. So Dothan has a lot of trade, and they'd be buying and selling, but slaves came through. So Dothan is where they are. When he finds them, immediately they're angry. In fact, it says when they see him coming, they could see and they could recognize by the coat he had. When they saw him coming, they were already talking. They really hated this kid. And you can understand by the family. Some of these guys are from slaves. And then a lot of them are from Leah. And there's tension between Leah and Rebecca and all of these things. Rachel, and there's a lot of things, problems. So they see him. And they decide, verse 18 of chapter 37, now, when they saw him afar, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. And when Reuben came, verse 21, where Reuben was, he's the older brother. He might have been out in business, buying and selling and doing some trade for his father. But when, verse 21, when Reuben heard it, and he delivered out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. So Reuben came back. And Reuben said, we don't want to kill him. Reuben should be jealous of this, of Joseph, right? Because Joseph took his spot. But there's something about Reuben all along the way, even at the end when they discover that Joseph is working for Pharaoh, that Reuben shows some kind of tenderness and care for the father. There's something else here that these brothers must have so hated Joseph and so hated Jacob. They didn't care if they brought this cloak back full with blood and said the animals killed him. There must have been a bit of pleasure in watching the father suffer so. So I'm going over this rather quickly right now, right? So he was hated by his brothers, and he had been favored by Jacob. So let's go on to 37:12. And again, I'll move rather quickly here. They're going to sell him. And Reuben said, verse 22, don't shed blood, but cast him in the pit. And they're in the pit. And Reuben, I think, is hoping when he comes back, wherever he is, to get him out of the pit and take him back to Jacob. At this particular time, they want to deliver Joseph to the slave traders. And it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because they're harsh and cruel. It says nothing here about Joseph's reaction. Obviously, he is a captive and he's hurt. But let's read some verses. I'd like to read some verses. Let's go to Acts chapter 7, verse 9. You don't have to turn there, but chapter 7, verse 9, this is the sermon from Stephen and some of nine. All right. Oh, verse 9, yeah. And the patriarchs becoming envious saw Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him. Whether Joseph understood that or not at this time, he's going to learn as he gets in Egypt just how close God is and how in control God is working. Anyway, so patriarchs became envious, saw Joseph in Egypt, but God was with him and delivered him out of all his troubles and gave him favor and wisdom in the presence of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And he made him governor of Egypt, and all was his. All right, so this is some declaration and some statement about Joseph. Now, let's go to Genesis chapter 41, verse 38. All right. All right. 41:38. Now, this is interesting. This is would be, let's put it this way. What is the key verse? Is there a key verse in the life of Joseph? Is there something that stands out as describing this young man? So verse 41:38. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all servants. 38. And Pharaoh said to his servant, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? When you read the story of Joseph, it is a tough one. But as soon as he gets in Egypt, it's clear that God is arranging his circumstances, arranging his life, and God is leading him to a certain goal. And that goal, of course, he will know later, and he will understand the dream. But this is what Pharaoh said. Pharaoh, this ruler of Egypt, sees in this man some exceptional spiritual character as one who is obedient and one who is submissive to God. So that's an interesting one, I think. Now, one more verse I'd like to read, and this is in Hebrews 11:22. All right, 11:22. Oh, yeah. All right, so it says, verse 22, by faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure to the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. This is interesting. This is the last part, and this is what he says by faith. Joseph lived by faith in a lot of situations, but it's interesting how the writer of Hebrews points this out. It said, when Joseph left, Joseph believed everything God was going to say that he revealed to him about the children of Israel. And take my bones and bury them. So I thought that was interesting that that's the only thing he pulls out of his life that had to do with faith. It's, of course, not the only thing, but it's important to the children of Israel. We're going to learn. And so this first generation of Israeli kids, Jewish kids who lived, had always wondered, how did we get here? What happened for us to get to Egypt? And how did we get out of Egypt? And they had heard the story, so they were able to read it. And this story explains God's work and what God is doing in their lives. So Joseph even had faith, the writer says, when he died, take my bones and bury me there and stay there, and God's going to do something with it. So it's interesting. So the first generation had heard stories. Now they want to understand more about it. So the dreams he had would be fulfilled, at least the first dream. And I'm going to bypass some of that. All right. And they had said also they wanted to kill him. And that in, hidden in their heart was hate and animosity. And this is something, of course, that is really important to learn, hidden in their hearts. They were so hateful that when they saw him, they wanted to kill him. And this hatred and anger and envy only makes things worse. When at the end, when we see a few things, just a few verses I'll read, because others have the responsibility, you're going to see that they felt guilty all along. And that it bothered them over the years that they had done what they done. So they said, let us kill him. All right. So we'll move on here. Joseph most likely said to plead with them. And let's look at one more portion, like the Psalm 105. I believe it's 17. All right. Psalm 105, 17. This is a good explanation of what Joseph was feeling as a young man. Look at how quickly his life changed. One day and one moment. Father's favorite son and favored. And in another moment, a captive and disillusioned. And so it says in Psalm 105:17, and he sent a man before him, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. Listen to this. They hurt his feet with fetters. He was laid in irons until the time that his word came to pass. The word of the Lord tested him. And the king sent and released him. Now, his feet were in fetters, right? And he's laid in irons, and God is testing him. This little did he know. And how can we know sometimes what God is doing in our life to test him? It was painful, and it was hurting. And remember, it was done in an instant. He comes riding up on a camel, and one of the things that I pondered, can't understand, I never will, is that he couldn't have been alone. I can't see Joseph sending him 50 miles up, say, alone. Here, kid, put your jacket on and go. Say, I kind of feel like he'd be a target. But whatever it was, this boy was in a real straits, an agony from 1 minute being father's favorite son and having responsibility and having hope, these dreams. Suddenly, they're crashed, and he's taken as a slave, and he is sold to the house of Potiphar. So they saw the anguish of his soul, and they talk about this when they're in front of him, and he's listening to them in their language, and they don't know he can understand the language. He's using an interpreter, and so they're distressed. They knew they were wrong, and but bitterness so fill their heart. And one of the things for sure, we can't let these disappointments and other things that come on when we think other people have harmed us or hurt our lives or hurt our ministry, to let other people to be so angry at them. So quickly, heartlessly, Joseph saw his life changed. And so in verse 45, chapter 45, verse 7, I want to read something too. Chapter 45, verse 7. I certainly hope I have the right reference. I have so many references, I get it mixed up sometimes. All right. 40, where's chapter 4? Here we go. Chapter 45. Now, this is at the end when he's before his brothers. You see, I'm rushing ahead, but others are going to do this. And Joseph said to his brothers, verse 4 of chapter 45, please come near me. So they came near me. I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold in Egypt. But now Do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourself because you sold me here. Now listen, for God sent me before you to preserve your life. Here is a man who went through great disappointment. His dreams of, let's say, his ministry or his life or prosperity that he was going to get with Jacob were all shot. And he lost his privileged position. And he lost his hope. He lost his family. He lost everything he counted on. And here's a man then that could have been bitter and upset. And something unique is going on in his life. And he now at the end, he says, God sent me. And remember, there's no animosity, no hate, so on and so forth. All right. Now, back, let's go to chapter 39, okay? Verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard of the Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down. Notice these phrases. Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. I wonder if at that time Joseph even understood that. He might have thought my abilities, or I'd been lucky, but whatever it is, it's clear. God was with him from the time he went into Egypt, all right? Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. He was a successful man, and he was in the house of the master of Egypt. He did things, and they worked out well. He was successful. No doubt he wasn't a crook. He wasn't pilfering things. He wasn't stealing money. He wasn't working for his own reputation. But when you think about it, here's a kid who could have been bitter. I'm not going to serve you. I'm here and I'm not supposed to be here. He could really be bitter. And he could be bitter that he's there, and he could be bitter with God. What have you brought me here? Say, later on, he says, God brought me here for you, for a plan, for a purpose. Sometimes we don't see it. We need to make sure that when things happen, especially suddenly, quickly, beyond our control, we need to make sure we watch our attitudes toward God. And say, instead of saying, why have you neglected? Why have you forgotten? Why have you put me in this position? That's not fair. And you've taken away the things I had and my hope. And what about the dream I had that people had bowed down before me? There's something about this kid that would not let himself, I think, be taken up with those attitudes, and they're easy to come by. They're really easy to come by, to question God's motive. But anyway, he did, okay? So in these verses, he said, but God sent me ahead of you. So chapter 39, when there, now verse 3, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all he did to prosper his hand. All right. The favor of God was with him, things he did prosper. And now Potiphar saw him and said, wow, see, I lucked out buying the slave. Wow. And the kid turned out to be really good, running the house and doing things. And there's an honesty about him. There's no bitterness. And I keep going back to this. Being bitter by the things that happen in our lives do us absolutely no good. All right, now, verse, okay, 4, some more. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house and all that he put under his authority. So let's go back to verse 2. The Lord was with him. Verse 3, the Lord was with him and he prospered him. Verse 4, and he found favor in the sight of Potiphar, and later on in Pharaoh. Pharaoh said, there's no one like this. The Spirit of God is in his life, right? And then verse 5, the Lord blessed him, okay? And then it says at the end of verse 5, and the blessing of the Lord was on all thou. This is Potiphar, when it says he had in the house and in the field. So everything was going well, and Joseph was in ahead of him. Now let's look at verse 6. I could pass this by, but there's a little humor. I don't want to pass this by. Verse 6. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. In other words, I don't know what's going on, but I'm in charge of my menu. And we're having too many pickled camel's hoofs for supper, and I want a different meal. See? And I don't know if that's true, but it seems strange upon him. He's in charge of everything but his bread. I need a different diet. And forgive me. Those things just get in my mind, and I laugh when I read it. Okay, so we'll move on. Okay. So the Lord was with him, and Joseph found favor in Potiphar. Now, there's something else that's going to come up that's interesting. Let's look at something here that the enemy can use. First of all, Joseph is alone. He's with strange people and a strange culture, a strange language. He has to adapt and do what the people want, and he's alone. He has no brothers. He has no father. He has no relatives. He's completely on his own. And that is really, really staggering when you think about it, right? He lost his coat. He lost his position, his privileged position. But one thing he didn't lose was his character. There must have been some things in him. These things that Joseph shows don't just come overnight. They just don't pop into your mind to do. And he doesn't look for any excuses to rebel against God. You broke your promise. Excuse me. You broke your promise to me. You have failed me. You have abandoned me. I've walked faithfully with you. This kid has something going on in his life, and it's God, and he's not bitter, right? And so he didn't rebel against God. He didn't let down. Now, this happened. Something takes place that's hard, hurts, especially quickly, perhaps, and we tend to let down. Well, this thing threw him over. I don't know. We tend to let down in Bible reading. We tend to let down in some other man. And he didn't let down. God prospered him. So Joseph was faithful in that which was least. He did his responsibility. There's a verse in Titus 2:10 where Paul is talking about things. And well, let me read it. Where's Tito here? Titus 2:10. I have so many markers. Okay, Titus 2:10. And it says, verse 9, exhort bondservants to be obedient to their master, to do well, pleasing in all things, not answering back, not pilfering, to get this, but showing all good fidelity. Here's the key, that they may adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in all things. In other words, there's no letting down. I'm in this position, and I'm not going to let down. I know the Lord, and I love the Lord, and somehow he's going to help me and guide me, and I'm not going to let down. I'm not going to get angry, or I've got this responsibility. He didn't let down. And that's what Paul is telling Titus, to adorn, to put on like a coat, the doctrine of God in all things. Okay, so he's going to be right exactly where he is, and he's going to live properly. Now, back to 39, okay, because this is important. At the time when everything is going well, right, and Potiphar likes him, everything he's doing, the things he handles, the household and all, everything is going well. And right at this moment, what's going to happen? He's going to he's going to encounter one of the most terrible temptations in his life. And that's going to come quickly too. You know, we sometimes think that I'll be ready for anything that happens. How do you know? See, honey, you know what I learned when I'm in mission field? I'm getting sidetracked here, but I like to. There were things I didn't face in America. Nah. So I figured, yeah, it's a piece of cake. Okay. When I got to Columbia, besides the Lord giving us some fruit, guess who else was waiting for me? Yeah, that's right. The enemy of our soul. So some young person said, well, no, that's no problem. I don't worry about that. I might say to them, you should start worrying about that. See? You should start thinking about it when you're out there, because you don't know what's going to take place. So everything's going fine for Joseph, right? Let's look at this. So verse 6 of chapter 39, it left everything Joseph had except the menu, the cooking. He didn't know. So anyway. And then now Joseph was, verse 6, handsome in form and appearance. I don't mean to be crude, but today the girls would say he's really a hunk, okay? He's a good-looking kid and good build, and he was ready to go. Now, it came to pass, verse 7, after these things that his master's wife cast longing his eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with him. Now, she didn't have much to do, right? And she probably was, well, wealthy, but had a lot of time on her hands and restless. I can see when she looked out of her bedroom, there's this little barn out there. Okay? And inside of it is a chariot. And this chariot is all ready to go. There's a horse and there's a guy who's a driver. And all she has to do is look out the window and say, hey, get my chariot ready. Get the horse. I'm going to the bazaar. God, I would bring him to her. She was restless. She was obviously in needs, and she looked at Joseph and said, wow. Now, I want to say something here, and it may mean absolutely nothing. Right? I suspect that her relationship with Potiphar wasn't real good. But in chapter 39, verse 1, I just want to lay it out. And it says, and Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh. This is the plain, common word in the original language for eunuch. Now, it doesn't mean, it's also used for officer. So whether their relationship was good or not, whatever. So she looks at Joseph. She cast her eyes on Joseph. She said, lie with me. And verse 8, but he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he's committed all that he has in my hand. In other words, Potiphar just said everything to Joseph, the books and everything. And he trusted me so much. He doesn't know. Right. Verse 8, but okay, he refused. All right. Now, verse 9. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. Now, this is ought to be our motto. You want a motto to hang above your desk in your business office? Verse 9, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Maybe that would be a little motto for some guy in business who is in all kinds of circles that he can't get out of in the business world. But I like this. See? He's trusting me. But think of this boy being abandoned, cut off from friends and family. I think about it. And this kid would have excuses for letting down. You know what he could say? He could he could think to himself, well, who's going to know? Who's going to know? I'm out here in the jungle down by the Orinoco River between Colombia and Venezuela. Who's going to know? Who's not only that, who's even going to care? This is the sort of thing that comes. And you could rationalize things. You could rationalize what's happening. You could come up with excuses to do what you want and figure nobody's going to know. He is saying God's going to know. See, I like that. Why should I do this and sin against God? Not because, well, maybe somebody will catch me on being there. But it's farther than that. I belong to God. You see, he's beginning to see something that is really interesting. He must be looking at things gradually. He's seeing what God is doing right. So this is, to me, it's interesting. I'm almost out of time here. Now, I want to read something. There's more I have here, but I want to read something this from F.B. Meyer. Most of you probably never heard of him. F.B. Meyer is an old writer, not just of past generation, but past generation, right? He goes back. And F.B. Meyer wrote some very interesting books, Abraham and Joseph, right? And Moses and some things on David. And he wrote some really good books. I remember when I was packing to go to Columbia, I wanted to take books, and then I wanted to have some books to take down to the natives with me. I didn't want to take them all. And of course, I took my Bible and I took my song book. But I remember taking some of these books, they're paperback by F.B. Meyer on character and how God works. And they really encouraged me. So let me read something from F.B. Meyer, because there's a question here he brings up, and I think it's appropriate to look at. All right. F. Meyer says this. Let me read it. When we have reached our goal, now Joseph has reached his goal, right? When we have finally tasted the pure air of the mountain peak, and I kind of like that when I read it, being up in the mountains of Colombia, overlooking the Andes, seeing all these little villages, knowing that you have some work, and we're being used, all right? The pure air of the mountain peak. We must make sure we don't lay down our armor. The enemy will never let up. It happens all the time. Why are these mega church pastors and others getting in trouble all the time? So now somebody could look at it this way. Wouldn't it be essential for Joseph to stand well with the master's wife? Wouldn't it be, if he's in trouble with the master at some time, wouldn't it be nice to have the old lady say to Potiphar, oh, leave the kid alone. He's a good kid, hey man. He does a good job, right? All right. He might think that to please her would secure his advancement. Maybe if I please the old lady, I'll get more advancement. I'll get more responsibility, right? And to yield for a moment, if I just yield for a moment, might win influence, which would bring best results. We watch our minds. We watch our hearts. We complain, of course, Lord, why this? And this is kind of normal, but we deal with it. We don't let it take over. We don't let it control us. Lord, why after all of this time and success back there has this thing suddenly fallen apart because somebody came in and ripped it out of our hands? Well, that's a good question. But you go back and you work and you get it back and you get more. All right. So anyway, so in 39:9, this is what he said, verse 10 of 39. So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not need her to lie with her or be with her. This was a constant thing. It was constant. It's interesting how it gets at you. It's a constant thing, and it's there. And when she finally attempts, verse 11, but it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, none of the men were home. All the guys were out in the garden, out in the field. They're doing their errands. Now she thinks the proper time. Who can know? No one. So, so verse 12, she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and ran outside. This is the best thing to do. No debate. Pick up your skirt and split. Okay. Just pick it up and tuck it in. You girded your loin and get out and hightail it. Set a new 100-yard dash or something. But get out. Best way to do. No debate. This has been after him. I like this. I personally like this. All right. So the path of obedience is often hard because this obedience, what did it do? Landed me in jail. That's another disappointment. I did right and I'm in trouble. See, I did right just like with my brother. I'm in trouble. Lord, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't want it. So this is a classic portion on being misunderstood and suffering for doing right. It's a good portion. Joseph is up and down so quickly with so little warning, right? He goes to his brothers, they take him, they sell him as a slave, Egypt, everything's going all right. Just like that, tossed in jail. One of the things, of course, we all pretty well know, Potiphar didn't have him killed. Potiphar is the head of the king's prison. And I think one Potiphar might have doubted the wife. But he made sure that when Joseph was in prison, he had a nice position. So he wasn't gonna kill him, right? So so Joseph, everything happened fast. Joseph might have thought different things. One, that good would come to the good and evil to the evil, right? Some of us think that way. The world thinks that way. But it didn't. Another thing Joseph might have thought is that prosperity is a sign of divine favor. If so, he would fail to see God's hand. Prosperity is a sign of, and I don't see how God could allow this, right? It's a sign of God's favor. I don't get it. So, what Joseph had to do, he had to get beyond the ordinary way of thinking to see God's perfect plan for his life. And so he's going through a lot of things, and I must end here. And when I do, this will be the last session I have for a while. So he tried to do good. He had followed what is right. But what had he gained for it? What had he gained by his integrity? Okay. Falsely accused the world hated Jesus because he told them the truth. So there's something else involved in this also. What became of those earthly dreams for success? What became those earthly dreams for ministry? It's gone. And he's thinking about it. My brother's bowing down before me. But these thoughts are working through his head. One of the things is he may be in jail, but still frustrated by his limitations, but he kept on doing good. And actually, he became a helper to other people. He must have been talking to prisoners. And when these guys dreamed that somebody else's business next week, and another thing he may have thought of, have I been too honest? We all know that what it is to be too misrepresented and falsely accused. It happened. All of us one time or the other. So Hebrews 11 says, no chastening for the present time is good, is pleasant, but God didn't. And I think that's one of the things I see in Joseph. Alone, God blessing him. And this thing with Potiphar's wife is absolutely amazing. This young kid has a nail. And I like that again. How can I do this wickedness and sin against God? God is the one he wants to please, right? Above anything else, God is the one he wants to please. So at this point, let me take just a look. Since I'm not going to be doing anymore, I'm going to take another 5 minutes. And so whatever, let me go with it. One more sheet. One of the things, learn, Joseph would not lay down on the job, right? His biggest testing now would be to remain true to his calling and his life is weak. Don't lay down on the job. I'm not going to do that. I've given too much time and nothing's happened, right? Instead of sitting frustrated and helpless, we ought to reach out to others. And he did in jail. He was talking to these men and he was helping these men and he was concerned for other people. That's a way to help us. It isn't the answer to all depression or anything, but it's a good way. Don't let down on the job, right? The word might say of God, not to be surprised at suffering for wrongful. We're all followers, we're all followers of one who suffered wrongfully. Huh? Jesus suffered wrongfully, and we belong to him. And so we shouldn't be surprised that would take place in our lives. And I could pause now. I went to the mission field. I was supposedly prepared, and I got there, and I found out something that was shocking. My hearing was getting worse. And there was absolutely no place I was going to fit in with the mission I was with. They only work with tribal people. And they didn't even know what to do with me for a while. And it was really discouraging. Maybe I should come home. Maybe I should do this. But I decided to hang around and see what could happen. And that's when I ran at these, I mentioned Saturday, I ran into these assembly young people. I ran into these kids from Emmaus. I ran into these kids and I started talking to them because I wanted to speak English. We're tired of speaking Spanish. Sometimes you get tired. So once a week, I went to the Bible study hall. Felt it. Anyway, that's how God worked. All right. One other thing before I quit, Joseph did not avenge himself. Later in life, he had power. And when those brothers before him, and they were trembling, you know what happened? Even after Jacob died, you can read, they were afraid that Joseph's going to punish them. They couldn't understand how God could do something in his heart. And so even after Jacob's death, all right, he didn't use his power to get even Potiphar's wife. So, three little things here. Then, he's a faithful servant. He has self-control. And he is suffering. Put these things together. And it's hard. And there's all kinds of surprises, aren't there? Somebody's going out to the garage thinking about their daily schedule. They slip and fall. Not only that, but they lay on the garage floor for a while, just like the advertisement on TV. They help me. I've fallen and I can't get up. And everything changes, right? Just in a second. And there's more of that. So be faithful, be true. And I love this kid. And I read about a lot in Columbia. Look at this. His whole attention, no matter what he does to please man, is to please God. I cannot go against him. Watch out for bitterness. Watch out for anger against God. Let God deal with your life. Father, thank you for the study of Joseph that we've done tonight. You know how much over the years it meant to me. In those early days in Columbia, taking these books by F.B. Meyer and reading them slowly, looking at the scriptures, how you blessed me and how you cared for me. And I thank you for this example of this man who suffered unjustly. We think of our Lord who suffered unjustly because the world hated them. And they punished him and they crucified him. And he saved us. And he's our Savior and our Lord. He meets our needs. We thank you for this and pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Good night.